You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Kevin Miller and Tommy Alquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Welcome once again to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. Tommy Alquist, Kevin Miller, and Tommy, we have quite a treat today.
Oh, this is a treat. This is a treat. She's laughing, but seriously, I think probably the most famous Idahoan, dear friend. We have an Inspire Excellence Podcast, but Kristen Armstrong, that's what her life's been surrounded by, is inspiring people. And so Kristen Armstrong, three-time gold medalist, is here. And Kristen, I feel like I know you so well that... But we'd love to have our listeners learn from you today, what you're up to now, but a little bit about your story. So, Kevin, I know her too well. You asked the questions.
I was going to say, here we have a three-time Olympic gold medalist, world champion, and she's so competitive, she's fidgeting around us too. And I'm like, we're friendlies. Don't worry about it. Great to have you here. You know, I have followed you through the media. I've met you a few times. You know, it's a pleasure. It's a privilege. And thank you for being a champion for America. That is a huge accomplishment. And you are a role model. Talk a little bit about what got you into cycling. What was the beginning like?
Wow, that takes me back quite some years. you know, I was always an athlete growing up since I was five. It was my way of meeting people and getting out. And my dad was in the military, so I moved every 3 years. And the only way I actually made friends was to be active through youth sports. And I did what most kids did, which was I'd play one sport one season, and the next season I'd pick a new sport, and the next season I'd pick a new sport. I never really specialized. And I went through high school like that. I graduated from Okinawa, Japan, where my dad was stationed. And I always say I landed at the University of Idaho, because it was kind of like landing. I mean, think about going from Okinawa, Japan to Moscow, Idaho. It was definitely a transition. My dad said to me, hey, you need some 501 jeans. And I was like, I'm not wearing 501 jeans. He's like, you might want to rethink that, because when you go to Moscow, Idaho, it's going to be different than what you're used to in Japan. And it was not till Thanksgiving I came home and I'm like, Dad, I need some 501 jeans. I had to go to a thrift store then, because they don't, you know, now you can just buy those washed ones. But so I graduated from Okinawa. You didn't get recruited, you know, like most kids would if they were an athlete. So I went to U of I. I walked on the track team my second semester, my freshman year. And I spent that spring, that summer training. And that fall, I went back my sophomore year, and it was just really difficult. I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And I actually just decided to quit. And it was the only thing I'd ever quit in my life, which was, my sophomore year in college. And it was all about having a good experience and having fun. And I was no longer having fun. And so I quit, and I continued my college days just playing intramurals. And then I graduated from college, and my first job out of college was I helped build out, and I was the aquatic director at the West YMCA. And at that time, I poured everything in, basically my heart and soul, into work. This is what you do when you graduate from college. And I didn't take care of myself. And so I'll never forget one day I looked in the mirror and I was like, wow, no one's telling me to go to practice anymore. No one's telling me to exercise anymore. And so I felt like I needed to make a life change. And I actually decided I was going to ride my bike to work one day. And I had this mountain bike. It's like fluorescent green, like knobby tires. And I lived in the North End in the West Y. I mean, everyone, it's, you know, obviously about, I think it was about 8 miles from my house. And I was like, okay, I woke up one morning, I'm like, I'm going to ride my bike to work today. I did. I made it. And I got a ride home. I was like, there's no way I'm riding home today. So it took me a few days to ride my bike back. But really, I was no different than anyone else. When you asked me what got me into cycling, it was really that moment of I wanted to make change in my, I wanted to be healthy again. I didn't feel like that healthy Kristen I was.
Okay, though, that's, and Tommy, jump in here, though. That's quite a leap. You're going from fitness, mm-hmm. which is great, which is wonderful, to the Olympics.
Yeah. How,
did you wave a magic wand? What happened there? Yeah. What got you into being the best in the world?
It's pretty crazy. So part of my fitness plan was I just thought I would start swimming and doing some cycling, like cycling meaning I would call it biking back then because I was really just commuting to my work. And then I have a background in running. So I thought, why not just, my friend challenged me to a triathlon and well, you swim, bike and run. And I swam and I did pretty well. And I got out of the water and got on my mountain bike and I had my cages with my tennis shoes. And with my competitive mindset, these people got on these bikes that were like the real deal. And they just started screaming past me. And I was like, who are these people? And my mind said, well, it doesn't really matter because I don't have to change my shoes and transition. I already have the right running shoes on. And I got off the bike, started running, and a mile into it, I had to walk the rest of the way. And then I took about a week and a half off because I had exerted myself too much. And that was really, that was several years after college. And so you can see, my competitive mind really took me to that next level. So I started competing in triathlons locally. I started going outside of the state competing, and I was working full time this entire time. And I started having problems with my hips and I could no longer run. And so people were like, well, maybe you should just ride your bike because you're really actually pretty strong cyclist. I was like, nah, you know, this life's telling me something. Life's telling me that you probably shouldn't be focusing on competition in your mid 20s to upper 20s. Like you need to focus on work, meeting someone, having a family, all that stuff the textbook says you should do. And my arm was twisted. The HP Women's Challenge was in town. And a local team called Goldies had this local token team and they got invited to compete with the best women in the world at the HP Women's Challenge. And I got a phone call and this gal said, hey, why don't you join us in Goldies and compete in this 10-day stage race? I'm like, I've been watching these women for years. There's no way I'm going to race with these people. She's like, come on, like we've been invited as a local team. And I was like, yeah, exactly. Local team. And so I decided to do it. So after work every night, I would put a headlamp on, I'd go train. And on the weekends I would go and I would ride all the routes. So I would memorize the mile markers like on Banner Summit and Galena Summit. And I memorized the mile marker so that when I got dropped, meaning when everyone was much faster than you and you got left behind, I knew where I was. And by the end of that week, I competed and I had 3 professional contract offers. And I always say that without the HP Women's Challenge, I would not have 3 gold medals. I would not have 1 Olympic Games under my belt. And so I'm always a huge advocate around what can we bring to Idaho that's going to support that next dream for somebody. Because honestly, I can say I would have not have left the state and raced my bike without a local race coming to town that just happened to be one of the largest races in the world. So I signed a contract. I worked full time. I continued working full time. And by now I actually went from working at the Y because I was a spin instructor at the Y as well. And I went working for an advertising agency in town. And Russ Stoddard was my boss and he supported me after I signed a contract. I wasn't making, the first year I wasn't making any money. The second year they paid me. And he allowed me to come back to work when I was in town. So if I would be on the road with my team, when I would come home, he would let me kind of pick up where I was. And it was a way for me to continue to work and race my bike and still be able to live. And he continued to support me that way until I was able to sign a bigger contract and be on my way. So then that leads us, I signed my first contract in 2003. And yes, my first Olympics was 2004. But here's the crazy thing is in 2004 was the Olympic trials. And it was the first one across the line at the national championships, basically won a slot to Athens. And I was a dark horse and cycling's a team sport. A lot of people don't realize it's a team sport, but it is. You set one person up, but you have to be, and some of your teammates become instigators. So like my team said, okay, Kristen, your job is to go up the road And when you go up the road, all these other teams are going to chase you. And then your teammate, you know, they're going to win because we're setting them up. I was just a dark horse. I was just this young. I don't even know what I was doing. So that happened. And I'll never forget it in my brain. I just rehearsed and rehearsed. I didn't want to fail in my job. And I knew exactly where I was going to go and have people chase me on this hill. I'll never forget it. And I went and I never saw my teammates. No one ever came up to me again. No one chased me down. And so I crossed the line and I was going to Olympic Games. It was like unreal.
They said, that's the last time we'll have you be the dark horse.
Right.
Were you? What did your teammates say to you?
Well, that's a great question because they had this after party. Because we had one of the top teams in America. So our team had already figured that one of us was going to make it to the Olympic team. Imagine going to a party where nobody looks at you. They didn't even know what to do. My best friend on the team, we had to buy off pretty much. Like she had already kind of figured she was going to make the team. She had tickets. She had a, you know, a rental place. And it was like, she didn't end up going. It was me. So it was a really uncomfortable situation and it was a huge learning experience, but it was definitely a moment like, yeah, I'll never forget.
So I think, so that's Athens. You go to Athens, you come off Athens and then the story I've heard several times of then the next three Olympics mm-hmm. where you win the gold medals. Those are pretty well chronicled. But I'd like to get into your mind a little bit today, now that I've gotten to know you a little bit better, Kristen. There is a competitive drive, nature, mentality around the way you approach life, the way you approach cycling, the way you approach everything. Let us in there a little bit. let us in there, because there's a lot of people listening today that wherever they are in their life, whether they're stay-at-home moms, they're new entrepreneurs, they're, you know, struggling in whatever way in their relationships and life. There's something about you that inspires people, that makes them feel like, hey, I can do something that's hard. I can do hard things. Let us in a little bit.
You know, I think that quite often people like yourself, they'll comment on my mindset and my husband will even say, oh, you're just so bullheaded. You're so strong. Or my competitors, when I would race, would look at me and they'd be like, until they would get to know me, what we would call off the bike, they'd be like, oh my gosh, you are a real person. And when it's kind of your nature, it's really hard to explain, I guess, what happens in my mind. Because to me, as crazy as it sounds, it just feels normal. It feels like this is how things should be. Everything I approach and everything I do, I take it to like the top level because I guess I care and I'm passionate about it. However, I think all too often, I don't know where it is in life that at some point in life, we either quit believing in ourselves or somebody doubts us. And we start following. We start doing things the way other people have done them. We come into a new job. And because the person who had the job before us did it this way, we feel like we need to do it that way, the same way. And so this is just, it's a cycle. It's everyone's doing the same thing, the same way. In one of my talks that sticks out to me, I was speaking at Micron for Women's International Day. And I said something that I didn't know resonated to people until afterwards. People were coming up and the only comment they had was about one thing I said. And that one thing I said was, how many of you sit in a room when you've been asked to be part of a meeting and you have a very clear role and maybe you're a marketing director or communications director and somebody walks in and in that room, they're telling you how to do things, what to do, and you don't agree with it. I said, how many of you actually raise your hand and disagree or ask why not? Or say, hey, have we ever thought about it this way? In just that one comment, people came up to me afterwards and said, thank you for that because I will never walk into a meeting again or leave a meeting again without contributing. And I think that has a lot to do with my mindset, is if we can break free from what we think people, well, we can break free from how we perceive things ought to be done, or maybe what may be right or wrong, instead of challenging the status quo, I think that we can all excel. But I guess the question is how do you get people to that point of believing in themselves? And I always go back to what happened in that transition in life. Why is it that some people like yourself, Tommy, can go out in this community, in this state, and make change happen, but others, they have the desire to do the same thing you've done and make change happen, but they just can't make change happen. What is that? I mean, what is that mentality? And there's certain areas that I can go out and I can make change happen, but there's other times where I might lean on someone like yourself to help me make change happen. Mm-hmm. So I guess you wanting to get in my mind, I want to reverse the question back at you and talk about what is that mentality? And I think it's, well, what is that mentality?
And so I'm not going to answer your question because I want to continue. I'm going to stay on this with you because I want to get to something today with you that I really want our listeners to in their own personal life, ask themselves, because I think for all of us, if you go back to most people in their life, and when you're around children, Lucas is how old?
Eight.
Eight. So when you're eight, his view of the world has no limits. You know, knowing Lucas like I do, I mean, he can do anything, right? And there's so many things that happen to us in life as we grow where limits are put on us. Mm-hmm. And where we stop challenging ourselves or think, oh, that just isn't possible. And I think that there's a lot of people in life that just are held back by their own limits that are placed on them. You, unlike a lot of people I've ever known in my life, have a genuine, and it's authentic, there's something down deep in you, desire to help people remove their limits. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a long question, so forgive me, but you got through the Olympics and think about what you did right out of college. You were doing the Y program for swimming. You want to help people. You want them to remove limits. And now you went to work for St. Luke's in their community health. Mm-hmm. The purpose of your job there was to also help people remove limits. But now you've started something, and that's what I want to get to, Pivot K Lifestyles and Fitness. And so you will be opening 4 gyms, but they're not really gyms. And I want you to talk to us about how, if there's someone listening today, because it's not just a gym, what your goals are to help others realize that they can pivot. The name of these facilities are Pivot. But talk to us about, to me, when people say, what does pivot mean? To me, the answer is pretty easy. It's removing limits for yourself. Yeah, it's finding balance, but it's also just saying, hey, what's possible for me emotionally? What's possible for me in my relationships? And what's possible for me for my health? So long question, but talk about how that drive that I know has been there for you all along now is getting translated to this next phase of your life.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I think that one of the most common questions I get these days is like, well, why do you work? And I'm like, well, because I am not an NFL football player. But also I can't imagine my life without contributing somehow in some way to improve people. And when I say improve people's lives, it can mean a lot of different ways. And what Pivot's all about is really, I go back to my college days where I graduated in exercise physiology and I worked at a number of nonprofits, and I worked not only at the YMCA where you have a huge diversity, and then I go and work and try to help St. Luke's, the largest employer in the state of Idaho, really move the dial on health, where we're trying to act and really address prevention. And what Pivot's going to be is, it's a place where I hope that we can create community. It's a place where I hope that people feel empowered to be their best. I mean, we have this amazing life we've been given, and I think we're all well-intentioned. I think when we wake up each and every morning, we want to be our best. When we walk through the doors of Pivot, I hope that people feel welcome. We're going to be super authentic. We're going to know you by name. And we actually want to make change. We want to help you where you are. And what that means for some could be that we've broken the barrier down because maybe up to this point, you haven't felt comfortable walking into a gym. For some, you may feel that you're always in a hurry in life. You're going in and out and you want to be and be part of something. What happened to the days where our gyms and our fitness centers were community, where we actually knew one another? We said, "Oh, hi, Tommy. How's it going today?" Instead of, "Where have you been for the last 2 weeks?" Let's change the way we're thinking. But also, I want to help people connect to the amazing resources we have in our community. So if you are walking in the doors and your intention is to be healthy, which is, "I'm going to go to a cycling class." Hey, that's great. But if you don't know what you don't know, and you don't know that you may have skin cancer, or you may not know that what your age-appropriate health screenings are, we want to help connect you to care. If we have a dermatologist on site to do a skin screening and we catch one person with skin cancer, we win. That's what we're about. Healthcare is really, really hard to navigate. And I want to take that difficult piece out for people. I want to connect the community with really, really good providers. I want to connect the community with really, really good resources. What are those resources today? I don't know. I haven't met our members yet. I don't know our community. Everyone's unique. It could be mental health. It could be health coaching. It could be you might want to work more on your diet. We're all unique. But if we support one another to be our best, it's a win for all of us.
Speaking of winning, you've had the unique ability, the unique honor of being on the podium when the national anthem is being played in front of the entire world. Can you take us there? What was that like?
I can take you there. In fact, what makes me nervous is if I take you there, I might want to go back to Tokyo. But it's probably one of the most powerful parts of the day. People always tell me that if you don't enjoy the journey, then it's not worth it. And I can actually back that up. I can say the day of the Olympic Games, I can't tell you it was much fun. There's a lot of stress. There's a lot of stress when I arrived. There's a lot of stress during that day. There's a lot of pressure put on you. It put years on me just thinking about the pressure. The journey, I wouldn't trade for a million years. Listening to the national anthem, there's nothing in my life that compares to it. And I don't think, well, I'm hoping that maybe I'll have to set up a podium at Pivot,
right,
and have the national anthem. But honestly,
I mean, the gold medal around your neck, the entire world watching in our national anthem.
Yeah. It's, it's, you know, and this is what woke me up each and every morning going to London, is to think that my son could potentially be on the podium with me because I wanted to share that experience. In Rio, he was turning 6. And so he didn't get to actually get on the podium with me, but he was right there. And I'll never forget when, he looked at me and he goes, "Mommy, why are you crying?" And I was like, "Wow, I didn't realize that maybe a 6-year-old didn't understand that crying can also mean happiness." And then he went on to say, "Well, you won, right?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And then he went on to say, "Well, it's too bad you didn't get a different color medal because you already have 2 of the other ones." And so, but going back to the national anthem and the podium, I think that's what I struggled with. And when people are like, "Well, why do you make another comeback? What do you have to prove? Why would you take that kind of risk in life to come back after having a baby, after having multiple surgeries?" And when I think back about that, I couldn't answer this 4 years ago, but as I think back on why I went back to London and why I went back to Rio, it's because, I don't think I knew in life anything that would ever match what it felt like when I won in Beijing. I wasn't being stretched. I like to use the word stretched. I wasn't being stretched enough in my life. I always felt like I could give more, and there was nothing more I can give or do or challenging as the Olympic Games were. I tried to be normal. I tried to come back. I had a career, probably a dream job, people would call it, at St. Luke's, doing what I thought what I would love doing. I wasn't stretched. I went back to Rio. I thought, wow, what's next? And it wasn't until this opportunity to build fitness centers and to actually improve health and to do it with the vision that I've always had, along with the team around me, I haven't felt this stretch since training for the Olympics. And so I think that you can look at being stretched as a good thing, positive, or you can think of it as a negative. And that's just the way you look at things in life. And there could be, we can call it stretched. We can call it being stressed, but there is good stress, because if you look at the outcome and you actually have a plan and you map it out, you know that this journey that we're on right now to be successful and to make change, this is what it takes. And I know I'm in the right place now, because number one, when Pivot is successful, it's not going to be a gold medal for Kristen Armstrong. It's going to be a gold medal for the state of Idaho, because I promise you that the way we're going to look at your health as a member of Pivot and the community that we're going to build and the culture that will be set, it's going to change the way people look at health. We're going to make things a lot easier. We're going to make things a lot more fun. And I think that people are actually going to see change. We're going to be results driven and we're purpose driven. And I think that that's what I want to share with, well, first of all, people in the Treasure Valley. And I hope that we can spread what we're doing and the energy we have across our state and beyond.
Can I ask you, as I'm sitting here listening to you right now, one piece of your life that may not be as public, but I've seen it now firsthand almost every week, is your relationship with Joe. So Kristen's husband, Joe, is an engineer. And you know, all the jokes about engineers, they're all true. He's the stereotypical engineer, right?
He is so engineer.
He's such an engineering mind. But an incredible human being. And I watch the way the two of you work together, and I think about all of the Olympics that he was there by your side, right? Mm-hmm. And I've heard you talk a little bit about him in that context, and now I'm watching the same thing on this business venture that you're in together. But mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what Joe has meant to you and means to you?
Yeah. So Joe, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, we've been married for 11 years now, and it's interesting because it wasn't too long ago. He looked at us and he goes, yeah, we do have an interesting relationship, don't we? I'm like, yes, we do. But when I say interesting, there's not often in life do you find a partner that, and I'll go into the male female thing, to see a guy who also is competitive, who also has his thing, basically put everything aside and fully pour all support into 12 years of me going time after time to the Olympic Games, is selfless. I mean, what he's done to support my success is, people may look at like, you're just lucky. That's amazing. It's actually, it's unique. It's not often do you hear of the support, this kind of support. In the sporting world, a lot of times when you have a male and a female competing at a similar level or even just competing, we always say there's only room for one in the house because of that intensity. And typically, unfortunately, there's a lot of times where a female's career might be put on the back burner because the intensity of, well, the guy wants to make it. But Joe's different. Joe couldn't be more proud. He always is the guy in the background. He's the buffer. He's the one who walks in and I need to save Kristen from this conversation right now. He spent countless hours meticulously dialing in my bikes. So now fast forward into this partnership we have, he's working with me daily. He was working, had a normal job once again as an engineer. I came to him with this opportunity and immediately there wasn't a question. He said, well, I can see how much is on your plate right now. I can see the stress. I can see how bad you want this. And I can see the passion you have behind Pivot. He's like, do you want me to help? And I was like, well, I don't even know what help I need right now. I just need a team. And it wasn't but a month later that he came to me and said, I am going to quit my job. So once again, it was no longer about him and having his own thing. It was saying, how can we support one another and how can we make this successful? Because it doesn't get much more fun than doing something. Yes, again, we're stretched. Yes, again, we're stressed. In the end of the day, though, to do it together and to support one another, whether it's good times, bad times, that's just it's a strong synergy. And I can't imagine how successful this is going to be because of the work and his commitment. Now he's left his job 2 months ago and the commitment he has, it was day one. He stepped in and he was like, hey, on this side of Pivot, he's like, I just want you to start CCing me. And then eventually I want you to basically be off of this. He goes, I want to be the new communication point for X, Y, and Z. It was that whole engineer brain and him stepping forward saying, these are my strengths. This is what I want to do. Let me do this. And so that's how it's been. And the team we formed to actually bring the first facility off the ground, off of 10 Mile, I couldn't ask for a better team and he's part of it. And so once again, Joe's just selfish. I joke around because he's engineer, but he's also from Horseshoe Bend. And so I'm like, he has a little bit of everything in him. He went to U of I as well, but he was before I was up there. We met, you know, way well after college, but
how'd you meet?
Well, you know, we met, I was struggling with a prior relationship and I had some friends say, hey, these local cyclist guys are having this kind of kickoff to the season party and it's going to be at Joe Savola's house. You should come. I'm like, I'm not going to some guy cycling party. Like, no, thank you. And they're like, no, seriously, like you need to come. And you know, he's having this big party and he's invited the women's team. And I'm like, I'm not interested. And my friend's like, I'm going to pick you up. So she picked me up and I walked in his house and I was like, I didn't know Joe was married. And she looked at me and she's like, he's not. I go, well, some chick lives in this house because guys.
So Kevin, I got to tell you.
Guys don't live this way.
He is the most meticulously clean person I've ever known. He vacuums the house at least once a day.
Well, we also have a carpet rake.
Yeah. And carpet rakes and the guy's garage. So like this is, there's clean and then there's Mr. Clean.
Yes.
He's Mr. Clean.
He is. And you know, that comes from being one of eight kids. His father passed away at a young age. His mom never was remarried. And so she had to run a very tight ship. And so he always learned that when he got something in life, if he didn't take care of it, he didn't get a second something. And so he's always had that thought of, hey, if I own it, I'm going to take care of it. So anyway, I went to his little get together and learned that he wasn't married. And I didn't really realize this, but that weekend when there was a local bike race, he said, hey, can I take you to dinner? And I was like, sure. Okay. And I went home. And I was like, yeah, we'll see if this guy calls me. Cause typically, yeah, they'll say, let's take you to dinner and you never hear from him. And it was like 4 o'clock. He called me. I'm like, this is strange. Like here it comes, the engineer type. He's calling me way before dinner. And he actually like followed through and picked me up and opened the car door for me. And I was like, this is strange. And I was like, oh man, it's one of these guys. It's the guys that I don't date. I'm like, you know, those guys that like, or gals where you're like, yeah, you're just a better friend. Like you're just kind of a nice guy.
Ooh, the friend zone. Ooh.
Yeah. And so I learned it was good timing for him to come in my life because you can only go so long with being treated poorly in relationships. Yeah. And so a nice guy came around, and if it was when I was in college, I'd be like, yeah, yeah, no, yes, but no, thank, yeah. But I learned that in life, it's much better to have and be married to your best friend and someone that's kind to you than, you know, always kind of running and kind of going with those challengers.
Sure. You know, there's a great song, Whitney Houston, One Moment in Time, when I'm more than I thought I could be. Can you give us an example of that? And for people that are struggling right now, listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast, what would you say to them?
I would say that in life, I think that we all have ups and we all have downs, and we can perceive and we can make people's stories whatever we want them to be. But no matter what, I always say never, never let anyone tell you that you can't. If you surround yourself by people that believe in you, you believe in yourself. And I believe that we were all born with a gift to believe in ourselves. And there's times in life where that's taken away from us, but it can be given back. But the only way it can be given back is to surround yourself by people who believe in you and they bring you up. And when I talk about part of what we're going to do at Pivot, it's about empowering people to believe in whatever they want to go after, that they can go after it. I mean, like Tommy said early on, it's like, how did you go from like riding a mountain bike to the YMCA and feeling out of shape to like Olympic gold medalist? Let's like bring us back here. What's going on? What happened here in these years? I surrounded by people that didn't doubt me. I surrounded by people who, like my husband, who always told me when I wanted to quit that I can't quit.
You wanted to quit?
Yeah. There's a lot of times I wanted to quit. I quit a lot. But I learned that if you have a team of one, it's easy to quit because a lot of times that team of one is going to agree with you. But if you build your team, you become a little bit more accountable as you feel safe to do so. You become accountable to your husband. You become accountable to your coach. You become accountable to your physical therapist. No matter what your team is in life, the more you are vocal about what you want to accomplish, the more likely that you're going to actually accomplish that. But if you don't become accountable and you're accountable to one, it's easy just to bow out because always one person's going to agree with you. But if you have a group of four, three might agree with you, but one's not going to agree with you and they're going to get you back.
Even through the pain, the injuries, the inclement weather. Amazing. Well, Tommy, do you want to say anything or?
Well, I just, I think this entire podcast this time has been filled with little tidbits that I hope people that listen to this can be inspired. Kristen, I've known a lot of people in my life, but the top of that very list for me is someone who inspires me and every single person around you. You've inspired a nation on a podium.
Yep.
You've inspired kids, and then you never stop. What I love about you is what people may not know is you continue to go give talks to boys and girls clubs and schools and colleges and women's groups. And I guess it's just a great example for us because I think sometimes you get tired in mm-hmm. life and you say, oh, can I do any more? What more can I do? And I know Kevin does a lot too for the community, but it's nice to be around someone with such energy to give back such selfless service. And boy, it's just a pleasure for us to have you on and for you to inspire us.
And finally, what inspires you, Kristen?
I have a couple of things that inspire me. And I think that first and foremost, I can't not first mention riding my bike for hours. It's where I do my best thinking. It's where I'm most creative a lot of times before my talks. It's where I have clarity. I'll write my talk on my ride and I'll come back and I'll write my talk immediately. So that's for my personal health, is for clarity. I'm inspired by risk. I'm inspired by doing things and going down a path that most people would think of as the unthinkable. People wouldn't even go down that path. I'm inspired by like-minded individuals. And when I say that, it's people who say, why can't we? Versus, we can't. I think inspiration is all around us. I think that what happens in life is we need to be more present. We need to actually recognize inspiration and not let it pass us by, because it's there for everyone. It's whether or not you see it.
Well, Kristen, thank you very much. And I love that saying, recognize inspiration, Tommy.
I love it. I love it. That's going to be the soundbite from this podcast. Let me tell you.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.